Hello.
I'm
Hello.
listening to your music.
How are you?
Yes.
Do you like it?
It's interesting.
This is all getting rather disturbing for me.
As well it should.
Indeed. Have we all watched Planet of the Daleks
Oh, were we
recently?
supposed to?
Yeah. Was your
Kidding.
suggestion, mate?
Yeah, I watched it, but man, it was like weeks ago, but I remember it. Well, that's rude.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah.
No, Kerry's got it. It's probably my mother-in-law anyway, so it's more than appropriate.
Terrible.
Gasp.
Terrible, terrible,
We don't
terrible.
record these bits, do
Northern humor.
we?
Working car, working man's club humor. Oh, the mother-in-law gag.
Do you know, I'm getting everything's very quieter than usual. Are you guys getting that, or is it just me?
No, you sound fine.
Okay, it's just me. I found a volume control to use now. Okay, shall we do the intros?
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Casterbrus podcast. Yes, with a K. Available on Casterbrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audioboo. It all started as a mild curiosity by these Casterbrites, and now it's turned into quite a spirit of adventure, don't you think? Listen.
Yeah, I like the new theme tune, guys. I definitely like the new theme tune.
I
Cool.
have to admit that the John Guiler intro and Russell Hugo's intro are the best bits of the podcast, which is
Invariably.
That is a bit fair to say. It
That's
does actually get
why we
better.
have that's why we have 3,000 listeners on
Absolutely.
average, because they tune in just for those two bits. And who can
Well,
blame them?
it gets better near the end when the theme starts again.
Yes.
It's just
Couldn't
that bit
agree
in the
more.
middle, which is a
So, as you may have gathered from the intro there, ladies and gentlemen, and chaps, I'm going to leave most of that in. We're talking about Planet of the Daleks this week. The 1972 John Pertwee story by Terry Nation, which is kind of a. It's, you know, you can be very trite and say it's another rewrite of the Daleks, couldn't you? But it's not really, because it does kind of attempt to do something a little bit different with the
Oh, that's my angle all gone then. Thanks.
Daleks. You can still push that argument if you really want to.
I damn well will. I've got nothing else to say.
Oh, so yeah, Planet of the Daleks was on TV many, many years ago. It was shown on BBC Two about 20 years ago. Well, huh. What year is it? It's 90. Probably before 95 then. Probably in 93, I imagine. 93 or 94, in the celebration or hangover celebrations of Doctor Who's 30th anniversary, Planet of the Daleks was on TV on BBC Two. And it was the version with the black and white version, episode 3, which, of course, that's not a problem now, is it?
Yeah.
If you've got the DVD. Now, I don't have the DVD, as it happens. I have the VHS still, because I've got a collection of VHSs under my desk, which I still have. The Seeds of Doom, Inferno, Planet of the Daleks, Frontier in Space, the Tom Baker years, and More Than 30 Years in the TARDIS, I think. There's probably something else. Where is it? Patrick Troughton years? Something like that. Yeah, Patrick Troughton years. So I've watched it in the traditional way, the way most people watched it over many years, with a black and white third episode.
If I can just point out here, as I said earlier, the most interesting bit was the theme tune and John Guiler at the beginning.
Thanks,
Now we go
James.
into the new segment. What's underneath Christian Crawley's desk?
What's under your desk? What's under your desk? Tell us, Christian, what's under your desk?
It
You're
gets
asking for
better.
you're asking for trouble if you challenge me in those sort of ways. It's going to get a bit Reeves and Mortimer, frankly. So it's a six-part adventure with John Pertwee and Katie Manning as Jo. Lots of Daleks. Now Bernard Horsfall's in there as well, who I think he was previously in the War Games as one of the Time Lords, and he's more famously known in Doctor Who circles as Chancellor Goth. And there's also that fantastic Doctor Who character actor, Prentice Hancock, in there, who's got one of the most amazing names in history, I think.
Yeah, that's a pretty good name.
I think it's a great name. Russell T Davies must think so, because he borrowed the name for Rose's grandfather in the Army of Ghosts. Now, so I watched half of Planet of the Daleks last evening, ladies and gentlemen. So it's probably been about 10 years since I last saw it before that. Brian watched it a few weeks ago in its entirety, didn't you, sir?
I did,
As we established in the preamble. And James hasn't watched it in a while. So as James is less familiar with Planet of the Daleks than the rest of us, we'll start with James.
So he hopes.
And... So, you know, it's 43 years old. And hey, you know, Genesis of the Daleks is 40 years old this weekend. The closing episode aired 40 years ago.
Maybe we should have done that one.
Maybe. So, James McLean.
I never particularly liked it. I like the opening sort of preamble.
Uh-huh.
I think it's interesting from sort of, like a TARDIS studies point of view.
Is that an actual thing, just before we go on? Is that a thing?
TARDISbuilders.com would probably suggest it is. But no, I think it's very interesting because, I mean, we always have this concept of the TARDIS being this infinite space, and still by Planet of the Daleks, there is still this, there's no assertion of this yet. There's still this almost assertion there is a bigger place on the inside than the outside, but it's still very much compact into the one set. Which they use quite well in Planet of the Daleks.
Yeah.
So I've always liked that. I've always thought that was quite interesting. This pull out bed. I presume they have sleeping quarters, not just they share that one bed. I didn't even mean that in a sexual way. I just meant in shifts with a. Well, I don't know.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh,
and
sorry.
You see, what happened there, James, was he thought things were getting boring again.
Boring.
So tell us more about the Doctor and Joe sleeping arrangement.
That's possibly where he parks up. Who knows? But yeah, so quite genuinely, if we go into sort of nostalgia as a kid, I was always very interested in those, as we've spoken about before, those TARDIS moments. Because they're sort of very quite rare in the show up until John Nathan Turner, that you get these little sort of breathing spots before the stories begin. So I kind of like it for that. I like the design of it and the aesthetic. I think the problem for me with Planet of the Daleks is that for me it is a retread of the Daleks. It's mm-hmm. and it's slower, and it has less character, and it has less point to it in a weird way, and it's a slightly disappointing follow-up to Frontier in Space, which was quite dynamic, busy, fast, and quite groundbreaking in a lot of ways for the show. So that was a problem for me. I do like the some of the prop things in it. The Thal guns are sort of like a precursor to the Liberator ones in Blake 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's always quite a cool moment. I think it probably tries to overreach itself, which is kind of funny since Frontier in Space really did try to overreach itself, but somehow worked. But the Army of Daleks didn't quite work for me. The invisibility was quite well done. I quite liked some of that. I liked the jungle areas. I think the bits I found a bit dull is when the Daleks really get into it, and they're sort of in the mountain facing off the Daleks. It sort of doesn't. They just don't carry the threat for me as they do in the original Daleks.
Right.
What about you people?
Who's going to go first, Brian? I think he's talking to us and not the listener.
I was really curious about the listener. Whoever you would like to go first, Christian, that is fine with me.
I'll go first. I think, I mean, as I said, I've only watched three episodes on this occasion so far, and I'll be watching the rest later today. So it's I know there is this whole thing which James has kind of reiterated there about it being a bit of a retread. I don't really feel. I mean, there's obviously similarities, and we know there's that famous story that Terrence Dix, sort of Terry Nation rewriting the same story and sending them the original story again when they came around to doing Genesis of the Daleks. And yes, there are similarities, but I think they're familiarity-based similarities, and they are totally new for the time as well, because obviously we're looking at it with the benefit of various recording media, being able to, you know, repeat viewings and DVDs and VHS and whatever, being able to watch it again and again and compare the two if necessary. So naturally, there is going to be those similarities, and I think there's some similarities between a lot of things. I mean, it could quite easily be argued that Stephen Moffat's rewritten a few of his stories. Or chopped two or three of them into one, for instance, you know. And I'm not, and it's not an excuse for any writer, as far as I'm concerned. But writers do fall into things that they're familiar with, don't they?
But there is a lot of familiarities here. There's a lot of tropes which you can see, not just in the fact that you've got the jungle, the Fals, and the Daleks, but you've got the aggressive move into the city as well to fight the Daleks moving out from the outside. There's a lot of similar processes going on.
It's kind of the anniversary season as well, though, isn't it? I know it's 1972, you know, this is the same season that the Three Doctors occurred. So they are kind of gearing up for that kind of...
But you've got to say, where there's smoke, there's fire. And we talked about Genesis of the Daleks and him pitching the same story. Mm-hmm. He did allegedly pitch the same story again for Death to the Daleks.
Yes.
And that was meant to be jungle-based as well. So you can sort of see whether out of financial... I can never tell with Terry Nation, because sometimes he seems a genius, mm-hmm. sometimes he seems a poacher... And sometimes he seems a recycler for financial gain. And I can never quite marry all those different elements of him together. There's a bit of everything there.
You've probably just described Russell T. Davies there as well, you know.
Well, probably to a degree. I mean,
Maybe different kind of volumes of each.
Nation's alleged poaching was meant to be very poaching rather than sort of... referencing or sort of homaging, which is probably more Davies' style. Mm. But again, it's how far do you believe? How far do these go? I genuinely don't know.
Well, being the only one who's actually seen the thing on DVD within the last 12 years, there is a feature on there where the writers do talk about how this story has way more similarities to the Daleks than... even just the simple things that we're pointing out. I mean, it really, I hate to be the guy to put it down because I did enjoy it, but it really is a retread of the Daleks with new elements added in and on a new planet, which in some ways is bad because, you know, we always want to just get more new stories out there. But in other ways, it's kind of like the thing that I always argued, although it's a little bit different here, but, you know, the master in... Deadly Assassin versus the Master in the TV movie with the same plot to steal the Doctor's body using the Eye of Harmony. People complained that, you know, it was poached idea, it was boring, this, that, and the other. And, you know, that's all good and fine, but in reality, if you have a good idea that failed once, but you know it'll work, you don't just scrap it and go with plan B. You go ahead and say, no, I really know this thing will work. I got to try again to make this work. It's different here because obviously it's not... a plot of the Daleks that is being reused. It's an actual TV story that has too many elements being reused, but it's still enjoyable. I don't know what it is about it that makes it different for me. I think a lot of the retreads, like Christian said, with the anniversary aspect, the anniversary year, harkening back makes it a little bit more fun. But I like the fact that the Thals now are no longer just these primitives, which they had de-evolved to by the time of the Daleks. Now they're re-evolving again, and they've got space flight, and they've taken some of their first missions to come to this planet to stop the Daleks out in the universe. I like the introduction, too, of... and I know we said it, and I can't remember their names, but the invisible inhabitants of the planet. Anybody remember their names? Spiridons, thank you. It just wasn't coming to me. I like the idea of them, and I agree with James that they were done very well. Even the invisible Dalek aspect was done very well. Although I will say I had to giggle a little bit when the Doctor and the Thals found that first invisible Dalek, and they had these cans that they're like, here you go, this is a chemical that will make them visible again. And it's just cans of spray paint. But not only do they just
what else would you need
this,
anyway?
Well, exactly. Because that's even what I'm thinking too. Why do you need a special chemical? Just get some spray paint. But not only that, they don't just spray paint like the head and the eye stalk and go like, oh my God, it's a Dalek. They wait until the entire thing is painted black again before they're like, it's a Dalek. You know? It's like, really, you needed more than just that little bit, but okay. One of the things that I absolutely adore about this story is the jungle setting, the jungle location. And the reason for that is because I love when Doctor Who does those set jungles. To me, it worked beautifully in Planet of Evil. I think it worked beautifully here, and I certainly enjoyed it in the Daleks. I love those studio-based sets. For some reason, they help with that alien atmosphere and that alien world, and I think they worked really well, and I think it's a shame that we get away from them so much in modern films now or TV now, because I think you can make them even more amazing now rather than just go, hey, let's go to a desert and say it's an alien planet. I think it lent something to this story that you just couldn't get in any others that were like the new stories, I guess I should say, that are just, like I said, set in deserts and quarries. Even the stories just set in quarries in the classic show, it's great to see them as alien planets. But when you actually create an alien landscape, it really helps add to the effect that this is not Earth. I enjoy that. Which is another aspect of the story I also enjoy, but I also find a tad jarring for some reason, which is weird. I'm so used to Pertwee, especially just from people talking about it, but also even my own memories. We all think of him as the guy who was trapped on Earth. But when you look at the number of stories that they actually got him off Earth, it's quite a lot. Hmm. But it's still a little weird when you see him on an alien planet, because I always think of him as the Earthbound Doctor. So when I first started this episode, that was like the weird thing for me. It was like, oh, wait, they're on another planet right now. Like, it was such a cool thing. And it came after a story where they were in space. You know, I don't know why. It was just such a weird thought.
I still have in my head two Pertwees. I have, as we've said before, the first Pertwee and then the Buffon Pertwee. and Buffon Pertwee is the one who goes to different planets, while the more grey Pertwee stays at home.
Well, they've got their own brigadiers as well, haven't they? Because Flat Pertwee, his brigadier's got a flat cap, or beret, as they call them in France. Mm-hmm. But we call them flat caps up here, son. Whereas Buffon Pertwee has a brigadier with a cap, with a peak cap.
And incompetence as well.
There's and that as well.
Far more incompetence to Buffon Pertwee as a brigadier. the flat cap brigadier is actually someone, you know, worth fighting for. He's they seem to get on quite well as well. Yeah, funny that, but there you go. That's Pertwee.
So what do you think about ice volcanoes?
I love the boulder, the sequence with Joe and the... I think it's Joe and the boulders, isn't it? That come down at her at the end of the episode.
All right, yeah.
Bouncy boulders.
And the one hits her, the gigantic one that does not bash her head in, hits her straight in the head. Yeah.
that's a brilliant moment.
Yeah.
So what other comparatives do they make? I mean, there's a Dalek, isn't there, that they use at some point? Like they do
with
the Daleks.
With this?
Just where the comparisons to the Daleks it? And the
oh,
planet
yeah.
of the Daleks.
Yeah, when the one Thal goes inside the Dalek. Yeah,
well, you
couldn't get two in there, Brian.
What's that now?
You couldn't get two in there.
No, good, fair enough.
That's what she said.
I like the bed. Hey,
did I tell you about my mother-in-law?
Oh, where's my rim shot? Where's it gone? Yeah. Have I still got it? No, I haven't got it anymore. Okay, carry on.
So yeah,
unfortunately, it was a couple weeks ago that I had seen it, like I said. So all like the basic ones are what's staring out to me, but it was I don't know. It was one of those ones that when you were watching, you're just like, oh, yeah, oh, that too, kind of aspect of their mentioning it. But and it's weird because some of them, they do stand out, like you said, using the Dalek, the fact that you have the Thals in the woods and the Daleks in the city, having to invade the city, having to find means to get into the city. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's just when you're watching it, some of those things don't stand out so blindingly, just because I guess, you know, you have the fact that John Pertwee is very enjoyable to watch as the Doctor, and Joe's always great. You do have people like Bernard Horsfall, I believe that's the last name, right, Horsfall, who he's great. I really like watching him. And as a matter of fact, I liked all the Thals. Even one thing that got me with this story, outside of similarities here, by the way, is they found the best sort of cost saver for an alien, which is let's make them invisible. And that meant they didn't need to design an alien. Sure, they designed those furs that they wear so that we could actually see some of them from time to time. But in the end, when the one dies, what was his name? Merat? Not Merat. No, that was a different one. No, maybe Merat. When he dies, they designed a face kind of like a, you know, like they would have done in a Star Trek alien, gray skin with lots of added bits on the head, like cheekbones and brow bones and so on, which I just thought, like, that's weird. Like, it's 2 seconds to show this creature and you never see it again. They never really had to design the Spiridons if they didn't want to. You know, that was a cost saving effect and they still went ahead and did it. But that's outside similarities. It was just something I thought of while I was leaping to the similarities here.
Sure, yeah. It's an interesting... I mean, the whole... I mean, we could do an entire podcast on what budgetary decisions have been made in Doctor Who over the years that have made sense and ones that haven't made sense. And that perhaps that would fall in the category
of... Write it down!
...that don't make sense. Writing it down right now, Captain McLean. Now, Planet of the Daleks, I can't really think... of this, but maybe you can. Can you think of any times where it's been referenced since it was aired in other stories?
Big Finish did something, but outside that, in the actual show itself, no. I
Remembrance of the Daleks. I don't.
Did they mention it there?
Oh, of course. Yeah, and when he knocked up something similar on Spiridon when he creates the interference thing. Yeah. I thought that was something. But what about the Thals, though? When did we last see the Thals? Is that Genesis of the Daleks? Have there been no Thals since Genesis of the Daleks?
I really don't think there has.
I mean, no.
I think it's safe to assume that they've all been soundly exterminated, of course.
Yeah.
The Daleks couldn't really wage a time war and convert their planet into that big thing that we saw in Asylum of the Daleks or in the Dalek computer game if the Thals were still wandering around, really, could they?
The Thals could have found themselves a new planet, though. Like, I think. How about this? How about this question? Because we'll be talking about that. But how do we think that the Thals could come back in the new series and be interesting?
Well,
yeah,
they haven't managed
they
it so far.
Well, think about it, though. They grew up on the same planet as the Daleks. They were in a war with the Daleks for many years, and they survived their oppression. And even as going by this story, they still continue to fight them, even after the Daleks went out to expand their universe, their empire throughout the universe. I think it would be great if the Thals came back, and rather than being like these characters that need the Doctor to teach them how to defeat the Daleks, maybe they're the Dalek experts. You know, maybe they've spent so many years fighting them that they know their tips and their tricks and they know how to play them and they know how to defeat them, or at least can stand up against them in battle more than humans can. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot that they could do with them now, especially given the history that they have with the Daleks.
Well, maybe some of them actually adopt Dalek mentality to the nth degree. So they actually start using what looks almost like a Dalek suit, but it has one less sphere on the actual skirting. So in Planet of the Daleks, when they find what looks like a Dalek and they have to spray it, they have to spray the whole thing till it's black to make sure that it's not missing that globe, so it's not actually for sure. It's Dalek, and not
one
a Bali.
Guy who was counting on his fingers in the background during that scene. Let me see.
Exactly, the Dalek.
No, I got 26. You got 26. I got 26. Oh, it's 26. Great. Yes, that's a Dalek.
It caused a lot of problems on the battlefield, having to try and count those quickly. Yeah. Which one is that one?
See they're a great big general. Maybe this was a bad idea. We should have chosen another distinction here.
Or maybe the Thals were decided to take things into, you know, take matters into their own hands and ended up as one of the Dalek factions in an unseen story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Brian's right. There's a lot of potential with Dalek, with Thals, if they were done right. They overly humanize them, I think.
I'll tell you something I did notice. Given that it's 1972, the Thals were a lot less camp than the 1963 versions.
Yes.
And, you know, 1972 is like slap bang in the glam rock era. So you'd think perhaps they'd be a bit more camp. Maybe cast Mark Bolan, David Bowie, and Noddy Holder as Thals. Just as an example.
The Thals were just treated very much as if they were human colonists. There wasn't that much. You felt
they're not that different to the Death of the Daleks, and they're humans, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Death of the Daleks. Yeah,
that's the problem with them.
I do think that they probably should have thought that Joe was one of them, though, because her hair
perfectly.
Yeah, I can understand them realizing the Doctor wasn't, but Joe, they should have been like, "Where did you come from? There's no other Thal ships on this planet." You know, something like that just would have been neat. It would have thrown her off as well. You know.
I was a little bit surprised that they accept the legend of the Doctor so, but being real so kind of readily, really. Other than Prentice Hancock, and then he changes his mind soon after. But I mean, he seems to be completely unstable throughout because he's constantly changing his mind about stuff and being angry for no apparent reason. And also, because really, I mean, if you think about the, you know, the sentence, it's like finding out that the bloke that's just landed in your garden is Jesus, really, isn't it? In some ways. And she's, I don't know, Mary Magdalene or whatever, you know. So you'd take a while to get your head around that, whether you were a Christian or not. And when I say Christian, I don't mean as in my name. I mean someone who's a member of the Christian faith. Or even, or if you're not a member of the Christian, if someone who's like a legendary character turns up out of the blue, you don't accept that it's them within like 30 seconds, do you?
Right, right.
I suppose it's an example of how nation writes for certain audiences. Because if you say you take survivors, that's very nuanced and very thought out how that would actually all extrapolate a plague on the planet. So assumedly he's thinking this is for kids. We can roll on that point. No one cares.
No, it's 1972. We can stroll on.
It's a writing technique, which, as you say, when you look back at it retrospectively, it looks sloppy. While at the time, you know, on a six-part serialization, you know, you just move it on.
So, there's a lot more to talk about with this. There's the flying Dalek for start off, isn't there?
Oh, right. Yeah, that was an interesting point.
Dalek, I suppose. Yeah. If you're going to be picky.
Yeah, and is that because that's the first time that we see the flying discs that were in the comic strips, although it's a little bit different.
Yeah,
you know, and they went with that aspect rather than a flying Dalek, which of course they did later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's the first time we see one airborne on TV.
Which, by the way, is another similarity to Daleks. Not necessarily the flying Dalek, but a Dalek rising up a chute that they drop a boulder or a statue or a piece of equipment on. Yeah.
Was that the Daleks? Was that Dalek Invasion?
That's Daleks.
That was Dalek.
Right. Okay.
Because that was once they got Ian out of the Dalek suit. They found him in that elevator, and he popped up, and they thought they were safe, and then the elevator was rising up again with another one.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
But I thought that was done well. I actually like that fact because I like seeing the evolution. Like these Daleks kind of were like, you know what, this is all great and fine. We're taking over the universe and all, but we kind of got to learn how to go upstairs.
It's not just that. It's like we're going to take over the universe, but we've got a bit of a problem because at the moment we're powered by static electricity.
Yeah.
So they do it in steps, don't they? So
yeah. But it's cool that I like that. I like that they evolved them. You know, I do think that's a neat aspect. And I mean, it kind of made it sound like a little bit in this story when he was like, get the gravitational disc or whatever, that they just had the one, which you'd kind of think if you're going to invade this planet and take over them, you'd be able to do that much better if you were able to go anywhere and maybe you could have a bunch of them. So who knows? Maybe it was new for this episode and they're sitting there going, maybe we need to rethink this thing. I know. Let's put it inside our casings.
But I suppose in the end, there's always the thing that my excuse to the Daleks is that they're extremists in the sense, not just in their ideology, but in their technology. And, you know, if there's something they can't do, they just blow it up or destroy it. So you don't need sort of personal discs. If someone escapes into the mountains, you just level the mountains.
Yeah,
end of problem. And so I've always felt that with the Daleks. They were never that bothered about the personalizing of the trooper, because the trooper would just back off and then you'd drop the nuclear bomb or the neutron bomb or the plague.
So the Dalekanium bomb.
Yeah, so everything becomes an extremist approach to dealing with everything, because everything they want to do is fairly compartmentalized. You know, you want to take something from a planet, you take it, everything else can be destroyed. You know, you want to take a civilization out, you exterminate the civilization, no matter how you do it. So everything sort of becomes very malleable, and you don't really need to have to make much effort with the individuals, which is how I've always seen it with them. But... gun, sucker, that's all you need.
No, that's a very good point. You know, because even in Stolen Earth, Journey's End, there's that one story where the father is like, you know, you leave us alone, and he takes his kid and he goes in the house, and rather than the Daleks actually entering the house and exterminating them, they just destroy the house.
Yeah.
You know, it sends a very huge message right there, you know. So yeah, that's a very good point.
Well, it's that line in Remembrance of the Daleks as well, isn't it? Where McCoy says that if they wanted to, they'd just level the whole area from space. And that has never really pushed enough, I think, with the Daleks in some ways. Because that, in a sense, makes them more scary than, you know, oh, I can get up here, I can be safe up the stairs. Well, yeah, see how you deal with that neutron bomb which lands on it. It may kill 50,000 people for one person, but they're not that bothered.
Yeah, it is a shame that, because there are so many things that they could do to the Daleks to make them scary again. Like, I always see these those polls that go up, you know, who's the scariest monster, you know, the Daleks or the Weeping Angels. And I always choose the Daleks because, to me, I think about the reality of the situation and I think that they're pure evil. Those things are going to kill you just because they hate what you are. And you know, they're freaky. What can you do to stop them? You know, whereas the Weeping Angels, they're no different than an animal in the wild. They hunt you because you're their prey. You're their food source, just like we would do to any other animal that we would hunt to eat.
Yeah.
So the Daleks, to me, I think that they need to be made more scary again. And that's a very good point that, you know, why bother to send down an invasion fleet aside from, of course, you want to be the thugs. You want to be the protection money kind of guys, you know. Let me show you exactly why you should be afraid of us. But they need to do a little bit more things like that. But then it makes the stories a little bit more difficult because if you can't get the characters together for the dialogue or for some kind of resolution, it does end things, make things more difficult to end. But well, it would be nice... Go on.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, it would be nice to see them find some way in the new series to actually make them scary again, somehow show how terrifying these creatures really are, what limits they really would go to, rather than just, of course, destroying the entire universe all in one go, you know. But you were saying, Christian?
Well, no, well, I was going along those sort of lines. I mean, what would you do? We're obviously leaving the planet now, but what would you do to make the Daleks a big threat again?
Good question. I think I would show, rather than them say exterminate and stop when somebody says, whoa, hold on, you know, and then they listen to what they have to say. I think I would rather just see them just kill people blindly, just go into an entire room where maybe the companion or some other important character found a hiding place and they get to see what the Daleks are really like. You guys are different. whatever you have to say to me doesn't matter because I probably already know it anyway, or I can defeat it. You know, and just see them just do the wipeout thing, just kill these things because that's what they are. You know, no more, hold on, wait a minute. Oh, maybe you have a point. I'll listen. Oh, the doctor's here. I'm scared. You know, they've got to find some angle that shows. I mean, these guys are, they're the Nazis. They're the intergalactic Nazis, you know, and they want to wipe out anything that's different than them. Why would you listen to anything that's different than you? If you think they're so inferior, what can they tell you that's you know, going to be of any importance to you? So I don't know. I think that's one thing I would do. I would show kind of how cold-hearted they really are.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't call them Nazis, to know, you know, thinking, you know, in realistic terms, they're not Nazis. They are a perfect Nazi cloned over and over and over again. Because, you know, there's different degrees of Nazism within the German, well, there's the Wehrmacht and there's, sure, there's the SS. So conflating them all into that kind of stereotypical Nazi doesn't really, although it's useful for shorthand, in the reality of the topic, it doesn't really help because it kind of stereotypes things. But I mean, I know exactly what you mean. I wonder whether a more modern approach to the Daleks would be to swing that around a little bit and make them closer to, as Russell T. Davies did in Bad Wolf, but it was never really continued, into religious fundamentalists, but less of the religious, more in the extremist sense, and have Dalek suicide squads.
Well, they did, in a sense, do Dalek suicide squads already in Destiny of the Dalek.
Ah, they did, but that was, you know, that was on Skaro, wasn't it? I'm saying Dalek invaders as suicide Daleks.
Hmm. Yeah, no, they could do
with neutronic, I mean, with neutronic bombs built into them.
Yeah, I mean, they could do a combination of all of these ideas, and that, I think what they need to do is, certainly in the new series, I think they need to stop having the Doctor and the companions kind of make fun of the aliens and the creatures. These things are killing machines; they're killers, all of them. You know, and what they need to do is go back to what Tom Baker and Liz Sladen said was very important, and what they tried to do, which was show we are afraid right now. Mm-hmm. There's moments where this is scary, this is bad. But as Tom Baker said, I also still have to show the audience that I'm in charge. I'm the Doctor and I will save the day. So you have to find that balance of this is bad, there's real danger here. I need people, including the audience, to know there's real danger here. So I think it's twofold. I think you need to make the Daleks scary again, and you need to make the characters reflect that as well. And I think that's kind of the big thing. Anymore, everything is just a joke. We wander around the universe. All these big, scary things are silly. Don't worry. We take care of them. We laugh about it. At the end of the day, we go to the next one because guess what? That's our vacation, you know, fighting big, scary things. I think that element needs to go away.
James?
Yeah, I agree with all that. Make them, I liked his earlier point, make them no arguing with them. Less dialogue.
Yeah, yeah.
More killing machines.
That's actually one thing that I thought was great about Russell's Cybermen when they were first introduced in series two, was how basic they were. You know, they had just their directive and that was it, and that made them scary. And that's how they were in the beginning, not necessarily the first story, but in the 60s they were. And that was what made them scary. There was no reasoning with these things. They had their directive, they knew what it was, and it's convert you, and that's it, you know? And once they got into the 70s and they started getting too emotional, you lost how scary they were. They were no longer scary, they were generic villains. And I think that's what it comes down to. If you, as a matter of fact, I just, you know, this is stepping outside the boundaries, but I just was reading a Spider-Man comic, and if you know anything about Spider-Man, when he fights his villains, he's always gabbing at the mouth, throwing jabs at them, left, right, and sideways, jokes, because he's nervous. He knows it throws them off their game, and he doesn't want them to know how dire the situation is. But in this particular story, the villains he had believed had killed a baby. So he went through the city, skulking around like Batman. It was dark as anything. He didn't say a word, and people gave him all the information that he wanted. Because they know when Spider-Man shuts up, it gets real, it's scary, it's bad. And I think that's great. You have this distinction in one character alone where if they're gabbing, okay, whatever, this is fine, I can probably beat him. If he's not talking, shit's going to get real, he's probably going to beat the hell out of me. And I think you need to find that same distinction with these villains. And I think having them be silent is, or more silent, like you're saying, James, there is a good approach, actually, because the less is more kind of thing.
Mm. Okay.
Whereas in this story, in Planet of the Daleks, I do think that was one thing. Like, we got this, we saw them hold meetings. You know, they were sitting there. They were kind of basically having a corporate meeting. You know, this is the output. This is this. We need more soldiers out here. Go get them. You know, it's that aspect. I don't know. They are an army. That's the one thing that I love about the Daleks over the Cybermen is that they do have individual minds. Too many people like to think that the Daleks are all the same like the Cybermen are, but that's not the case. They all just had what they thought were the weak emotions pulled out, but they do have individual minds. They do think for themselves. They just know that they're in the military. They all think that they should be the superior race out there, so they follow those orders. But they are soldiers. They are individuals, just as human are individuals, just with less emotions or enhanced emotions in the bad ways. So I think those kind of aspects should be noted and should be played on a little bit more. But once you sit down and just make the Daleks out to be more like corporate rather than military or guerrillas of some sort or terrorists, you start to lose a little bit. And I think that was one of the detractors in this story when the Daleks did appear, because I do agree with James that they weren't quite as much of a threat as they should have been or were in the past. And I think that might be it.
I think I would do that. I would remove all those mission meetings, those expositional meetings. I'd have the doctor or whoever it is have to presume what the plan is and not have Daleks tell the audience, not have them as expositioners at all. So they would be very alien. You would be dealing with them in a very cold approach. You would not hear their master plans. There'd be no theatrical element to them. They would just kill, and they'd have an agenda and you'd have to stop it. I think that would be quite oppressive.
Yeah, and really, being the superior race in the universe, you'd think that they would sit there and, there's arrogance at play, I guess, if you want, for them giving away their goals, because who can stop us, kind of thing. But you'd think if you were really that superior and you wanted to find out if anybody could ever match your intellect or really stop you, why tell them the plan? If they can figure it out, then you know you've got a problem on your hands. So well,
the other factor is you know, we communicate enough by texts and Skype and the like as it is. You know, you'd relay everything through internal networks, so you wouldn't overhear plans because they'd be told internally. Yeah. So again, I would bring them up to date in that sense as well. I think there's still a little bit too much old-fashionedness about approaching them.
The same goes for the Cybermen as well, and I think probably the best example of how this can be done is in probably Justin Richards' best Doctor Who book, System Shock, from 1996. Hang on, I'll just get it.
Under the desk?
No, it's on the bookshelf behind me. this is 1995. This came out by Justin Richards, BBC Books. Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane set in 1998 and had an older Harry in it, who was working with MI5. Good for Harry. And it is about an invasion by a race of cybernetic lizards. And it's similar to the... It's got aspects... It borrows a bit from the War Machines and from the invasion in terms of the companies behind... The front companies for
WOTAN. Is that a recommendation for the invasion?
it could well be, yeah. It could well be.
Oh, sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, which is basically like WOTAN tried to do, take over the world through the internet before the internet was invented. And there's elements of the company that's in this book bought up International Electromatics and tried to take over the world through basically the Internet of Things 20 years early. So you've got toasters with chips in and other electronic equipment. So if that whole IT contemporary technological aspects to alien invasions is completely missing from TV Doctor Who. And that Justin Richards has done sterling work as Doctor Who book range editor, and in some of his own novelizations. It's not really unfair to presume or suppose that maybe they'd bring him in as an advisor in this area. Is it really?
You know,
it's not
I
like
think...
he's a complete outsider, is it?
Yeah.
No.
He or anybody, really. I think that's one of the things with showrunners being fans is that they kind of feel maybe they don't need an advisor because they've got it all in their heads. But it would be nice to have somebody who's kind of on the continuity, and not even just on the continuity, but on the subject of what's worked, what hasn't worked. But I mean, you know, going back again to a story that we just recently talked about, kind of not being treated the best, but Aliens of London, World War III. Not treated the best because of how they treated the aliens, but treated very well, in my opinion, because they actually did have the aliens working themselves into our system mm-hmm. in order to take us over. You know, and that is something that really is missing a lot. And yeah, I do agree. Yeah. I like that kind of corporate aspect. And not that it needs to be in everyone, but it certainly needs to be done well, you know, if you're going to do it. And I liked the idea of International Electromatics and how that they worked with the Cybermen. And I liked their mention in Rise of the Cybermen. I was a little disappointed to find that there wasn't more of a connection between the actual Cybermen and that company and that universe, though. But yeah, I think it would be good to hire people like that. Like, I mean, they had what? They had Gary Russell on as a script editor. Hopefully Gary Russell was able to open his mouth a little bit and help them out with certain details that maybe they didn't think about. Who knows if he was allowed that kind of privilege, though.
Well, just on Justin Richards again. I mean, he's not just a writer either. He's, he was a technical writer, and he worked at IBM. So, like, he knows IT and he knows technology. So it's not like a wild stab in the dark. This is the guy you would turn to in those situations. One would suppose. All right, let's wind it back. Planet of the Daleks. Let's give it. Do we want to give it a rating? What was it we were doing the other week? When we did series one and two. What series one and two parts? What did we do then?
We were just doing standout moments.
Standout moment. So standout moment in Planet of the Daleks, then.
Standout moments in Planet of the Daleks. Who goes first? Anybody?
James.
12 years on, James. Can you do it?
12 years on. Standout moment for me. I still like the TARDIS being gunked, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. You know, what I was going to say about the, just going back to that, that whole unit that I don't recall seeing it in any other episodes, but my mum and dad used to have a unit like that. It didn't have a bed that came out of it or anything like that, but it was all white and it all had little silver round knobs on it, on all the drawers in the cabinet. There was a cocktail cabinet in there as well.
Funny. It's a good set, that one, I think. I think that's a good compact TARDIS set, not too big, not too small.
What do those three bits at the back do exactly that look like they were recycled for the Ark in Space?
What, the spotlight?
The transporter pad looking thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like three spotlights underneath the monitor, isn't it? It's so weird.
Yeah.
I suppose it's an evolution from the bit at the back wall that was on Hartnell's where the fault locator was.
Yeah.
Had a similar pattern, but then they removed all the computers and started to knock it back. It's got a good... Again, a bit anal. It's got a nice TARDIS landing sound as well, where it has a sort of sure. almost like a warning beep before it starts to land.
Yes.
I like that. Yeah.
And I have to say, too, like as much as I love the roundels from Tom Baker's last TARDIS all the way through to the end of the series, before they scrapped it anyway, it's a shame that those series kind of, you know, through like mid Tom Baker anyway, they took over and all his console room was just walls of roundels.
Yeah.
Because I do really like the first Doctor and the second Doctor's console room, as well as this one in Planet of the Daleks with John Pertwee. I like how they tried to make the room more than just similar looking walls.
Yeah, exactly.
And I see that they've obviously done that now with this latest console room, actually with Matt Smith's first console room as well. But it works really well. It makes it feel like there is more to this ship than just these octagon-shaped walls, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So standout moment for me, I think, is... I do agree with James. I think the whole bit in the TARDIS is being as good, but I'm always taken by the Flying Dalek. Then again, the model shot at the end, although it is full of toys... It is still well executed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
I think I'd probably go with that, actually.
I like the idea of the ice volcanoes too. I don't know. It could be a little hokey, I guess, if you get there, but I think it's an interesting idea to think there's some planet out there that has molten ice.
I think it's fair to say that maybe calling it molten ice is a little bit inaccurate, but I think it's probably fair to say that there must be a planet out there with ice volcanoes. Probably not a planet that humans can breathe upon, because there'd probably be there'd be methane in the atmosphere in quite high quantities. I think I've read something about this somewhere. Maybe not methane, maybe ammonia. One of the two, anyway. So I think it's fair to say there probably is a planet out there with ice volcanoes or liquid ice or something.
Liquid nitrogen, even.
So, right, who hasn't done their standout moment?
That'd be me.
That's you.
Like you, I agree. There's a couple to choose from, but I think the one I'm going to go for is because I came off of the heels of watching Day of the Daleks first. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have to call out Roy Scouton and Michael Wisher for doing the Dalek voices in this story. And particularly because I was listening to them and I was thinking it's a shame that maybe they're not the best used when you're watching that meeting scene. But the voices are great. The voices were very well done. And then when I looked at and I saw Michael Wisher's name pop up in the credits, I was like, oh, I don't know why that didn't occur to me before, or it's not in my memory at all. But, here's Davros playing a Dalek before he was Davros. And I think they did a really good job with it. And when you listen to them, you can actually almost pick him out, really. It's not like he does the same voice, which is great, But yeah, obviously it was a major improvement over Day of the Daleks, so that's a very easy thing to say. These Dalek voices were better, but I think there's standout Dalek voices in this one. Two very good Dalek voice actors on it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, are we going to take Planet of the Daleks as our single recommendation, or are we got anything else we want to talk about? Yep, okay then.
Yeah, that's fine.
That makes it easier. Okay, just before we pass you, dear listener, to your next podcast. I was going to do kind of a Radio 2 style handover then with Steve Wright or something, which is a horrendous thought. There's a couple of things I want to mention. There's because you may not know this, because it's been kind of a last minute shock thing, and we don't know what's behind it. There's rumours behind it that it might be something quite big. That we are party to, but we're not really allowed to say, so we're not going to go into that in too much detail. But the Russell T Davies and Gareth Roberts New Adventures novel adaptations with Big Finish have been brought forward to this month, dear listener. So if you were looking forward to Damaged Goods and The Well-Mannered War, first by Davies and the second by Roberts, the first Seventh Doctor story and the other a Fourth Doctor and Romana story, then they're out this month, not May. So don't miss those if you are so inclined. And also, Doctor Who Legacy is adding adverts into the game. James, are you still playing Legacy?
I actually downloaded it for my phone just last week.
Right.
But I couldn't get past the first couple of levels just out of familiarity. But yeah, okay. it stopped working on my Kindle.
So yeah, I remember you said, yeah. Okay, so they've been added as inconspicuously as possible for people who haven't paid for the fan area, which, I mean, that's fair enough because it's been going for a while, and it's a free game with a ton of levels in it, so I don't think that's a massive issue. Just if anyone's listening and they've ever had dreams that have featured themselves with the Doctor, or had the Doctor or Daleks or Sidemen or the Master or Clara or Rose or Captain Jack or Rory or whoever, visit them in their dreams. We have a little post on Casterbus asking you for your recollections in this kind of dreamscape time travel esqueness. So if you are inclined, please leave us a note there. You can contact us via email, christian@casterbus.com. You can contact us via Twitter, CasterbusDW. You can leave a comment on Facebook. And you can even record us a reply to our podcast if you listen through Audioboo. And if you are so inclined, it would be really awfully terribly nice of you to leave us a review. There's some great reviews on iTunes for the podcast so far, but we need more. If you're all on iTunes and you've got 30 seconds to spare, please tell iTunes how great you think we are. That brings us to the end of this week's Casterbus podcast with a K.